How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome back to the OHIO podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Buckeye Box, that man over there is Wild Man Chris Wilds. And we continue with our Big Ten previews, and we are going to talk about Ohio State's other rival. That would be the Penn State Nittany Lions, Chris. Now, the new Big Ten is going to be very interesting, and I can't help but feel that this rivalry is going to take a little bit of a backseat to what is going to become, I think, the new rivalry for Ohio State outside of the team up north. In Oregon, doesn't mean that we won't continue to be rivals, just means after this year, I don't think we're going to play them next year. And if you're not going to play someone every single year or see them in the college football playoff, then I don't know how much of a rival you can really be. So that kind of hurts my feelings a little bit because, gosh, going all the way back to when Penn State joined this conference in the 90s, this has been a tremendous rivalry for both programs.
Yeah, and honestly, during the two decades when that team up north was just a really down program, Penn State really was that kind of rival force that gave us the close games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, under James Franklin, they've not been very successful against Ohio State, but, you know, at the same time, in the course of the last two decades, not a whole lot of teams have been successful against Ohio State. With the exception of a short run by Michigan State and, you know, some hiccups at Wisconsin or with Wisconsin, you know, that's about it. I would say Penn State has played us by far tougher than any other team.
Well, I would say they're the most consistent because, you know, you had Wisconsin for a few years there with Tressel. You had Michigan State for a few years with Urban Meyer. You mentioned the troubles that the Wolverines had for the better part of two decades. And outside of those last few years under Paterno, Penn State has been consistently very good and have had consistent good games against the Buckeyes. So that being said, let's take a look at what they did last year, how well they did, and then a little bit of their history before we turn the page. And got a great interview with for you guys. Got Andrew from the Nittany Blues podcast going to come on. And then we're going to give our predictions. So, Chris, looking at how they did last year, they started off really well with six wins in a row against West Virginia, Delaware, Illinois, Iowa, Northwestern, and UMass before a 8-point loss in the shoe to our Buckeyes. They bounced back with a win over Indiana and Maryland, and then they got beat 24-15 by the Wolverines in their home stadium, where the Wolverines never threw the football in the entire second half, which is kind of embarrassing. They beat Rutgers 27-6, and then they ended the season with a big win over Sparty before going to a bowl game where they lost 38-25 in a disappointing loss to Ole Miss. Now, last year, Chris, you and I both predicted they would go 11-1. Vegas said this was a 9.5 win team. With their 10 wins, we both won the money last year on Penn State. Last year, they had a total record of 10-3, 7-2 in the Big Ten. James Franklin now has a record of 88-39 overall at Penn State. Of course, you can find them at University Park, Pennsylvania, where they play at Beaver Stadium, one of the larger ones in the country. 106,472. Don't know where that 5 came from there. 457.2, okay? Use your imagination there. all-time record, 930 wins, 409 losses, 42 ties. They have a bowl record of 31-20 with two ties, and they have won the Big Ten 5 times. This is a pretty good program, Chris.
Yeah, they are. You know, this is truly a blue blood program in college football, Eric. However, I think that even with their success, I think it's become a common theme. James Franklin's Penn State is the team they thought we were. They're the team that's not going to beat Ohio State. They're not going to beat Michigan consistently. But they're going to go 9-3, 10-2, going to go to a bowl game. But, you know, despite all their success they had early on, and since Franklin's taken over, they've only had one conference championship. And they've had a lot of talent roll through Happy Valley. It wasn't for a lack of talent. Yeah, this is a historic program, a very good program, one that if it doesn't take a step towards greatness this year, I think you're going to find that James Franklin may find his seat a little warm.
Yeah, it very well could be. And, of course, we're going to get into that with the interview that I pre-recorded with Andrew from the Nittany Blues podcast, which we're going to play for you right now after that great interview, which I think you're going to thoroughly enjoy. Chris and I will be back to talk roster as well as schedule and predictions. And welcome back to the OHL podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Buckeye Boggs, and I'm joined by our special guest tonight, Andrew from the Nittany Blues podcast, our sister podcast over at the College Huddle. Andrew, of course, covers Penn State. Since this is our Penn State preview, Andrew, welcome to the OHL podcast.
Appreciate the warm welcome, Eric. It's a pleasure to be on here with you.
It's good to talk rivals. I mean, a lot of times we have people on and they look at us as a rival, but they're not. But you indeed are a rival. Eastern border rival, that is. And, of course, the Big Ten has tried everything to get away from that, it seems like, outside of one for us. But we still look at Penn State as old rivals, and I'm sure you guys still view us as the same. And really looking forward to the matchup this year. Now, before we dive into the list of questions that I sent you, Andrew, I do want to dive in a little bit on James Franklin. I was just recently in the state of Pennsylvania, and I made the comment on one of our shows that, and I'm not sure how far Erie is from campus. I'm guessing 2 hours.
Yeah, probably a little bit, like between 2 and 3 hours, since it's up tucked in the corner of the state.
Yeah. Okay. So I was up in Erie. So we're looking at like the distance of maybe like a, I don't know, a Cleveland to Columbus, maybe, you know, depending on traffic. Maybe a little bit further than that. But I made the observation that this time there, I didn't see a whole lot of Penn State fans anywhere I looked around. So I was wondering if you could either put to rest my concern for your fan base or fan the flames, that it seemed like to me that the Penn State fan base, maybe under a little bit under the 9-3, 10-2 James Franklin, is getting kind of like tired of this a little bit, or am I just misreading the room a little bit?
Yeah, I, to be completely honest, I don't know too much about kind of the fervor of Penn State fandom up in that area, because I imagine there's probably a healthy number of people who have more Ohio, not Ohio State specifically as like a school, but just Ohio as in like statewide fandom in terms of like the Browns, maybe the Bengals and stuff like that. But to your point, I think there is some level of apathy that's kind of building from the Penn State fan base, just given that, you know, every season has kind of been an episode of Groundhog Day where, you know, Penn State comes in with high expectations, there's all this talent and all these things, and then Penn State inevitably goes 10-2, usually losing to Ohio State and Michigan. They are, you know, they're in competition for New Year's Six Bowl. Some years that game has gone their way, other times it hasn't, and it's kind of been rinse and repeat. So, you know, I would say it has kind of like worn thin on a portion of the fan base. I would say that this season injects a little bit more intrigue to, you know, maybe the more casual Penn State fan, because now it's no longer a situation of, okay, we have the Big Ten East, we know we have Ohio State and Michigan, and those are the big mountaintop that they have to climb over. Now it's a new look Big Ten. It's a better Big Ten, you know, by a lot of metrics. So now the question kind of shifts from, can Penn State beat these two powerhouses, to how can Penn State establish themselves to at least be in the conversation of that, like, kind of upper tier of new Big Ten teams.
And so I think that's probably one of the things that I've been reading the most. And that's obviously a storyline going into the season. And the other being, I would say, probably Drew Aller, his development at Penn State. Talk a little bit about Drew and where he's at with the program now, and your perspective of what you're anticipating from him this season.
Yeah, so I think coming into last season, like, the expectations were obviously sky high. He was the highest rated quarterback that James Franklin had brought to Penn State to date over the course of his 10 years at Penn State. So, you know, fans are naturally going to look at him and be like, okay, like, this is our Justin Fields. This is our, you know, insert All-American quarterback here. Like, this is our guy. And, you know, I think that he showed moments where he was that five-star quarterback, but then he also showed a lot of moments where he was a first-year starter and hadn't completely put it all together yet. So by no means do I think that he was bad. I just also don't think that he was consistently great. So I think, you know, couple that with some of the challenges that they had at the offensive coordinator spot with Mike Yurcich, which obviously ended with a midseason firing and whatnot. And you get kind of an up and down year from your quarterback, who has a lot of expectations on his shoulder. But going into this year, I think it's very interesting because he's going to have another year under his belt, obviously, as a full 12 games as being the Penn State starter. You bring in Andy Kotelnicki, who is a very intriguing has very intriguing potential for Penn State offensively because of what he was able to accomplish at Kansas. And bringing out a lot in the talent that he had with the Jayhawks. One thing that I think will be very interesting to see early on is how Kotelnicki's philosophy blends with Drew Aller's strengths and weaknesses, because when you look at some of the kind of play-by-play progressions of Drew's performance last year, and this was admittedly done by people who are much smarter than I am in this regard, but there were moments where he struggled in things like play action and just other situations, where that's where Kotelnicki was having some of the greatest success at Kansas, was in play action and doing a ton of pre-snap shifts and motion. And that's where Penn State really kind of fell behind the ball last year. Like, there was just barely no pre-snap action happening at all. So one thing for me personally that I'm really looking forward to seeing is Andy Kotelnicki going to be able to kind of bridge that gap for Aller a little bit in terms of his skill set and what he's comfortable with? Or is Kotelnicki going to be forced a little bit to shift his philosophy, play more to Drew's strengths, and then we don't necessarily see Kansas 2.0, but we see something new entirely?
That's super interesting, Andrew. Is there any other storylines I'm missing? Those two I felt like were the main ones, but is there anything else that I'm missing going into the season that's of interest?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, you know, the pressure is higher than ever right now for James Franklin to get Penn State into the college football playoff, regardless of the fact that they're replacing both coordinators. Like, it's Penn State, they recruit at a high level, they're a perennial top 10 team going into each season now. This should be the year that Penn State should get into the playoff. And it's going to be very hard to overcome the disappointment of the fan base if they fail to do that this year. So, you know, even though they are going to have to navigate replacing both Yurcich and Diaz, like, both the guys coming in have, you know, a lot of pedigree coming in. They're being compensated very well to navigate those challenges. So this is kind of it for Franklin in terms of, like, okay, like, you know, having four teams and having to overcome Ohio State and Michigan was one thing, but now you've got a 12-team field. Like, you got to do it now.
And if he does it, is he then put on the hot seat, or is his seat already warm?
I would say it's kind of put on hold right now. Like, you know, when you're replacing both these guys, I think everybody's kind of expecting maybe a couple games of growing pains a little bit with two new coordinators and stuff like that. Again, everybody's being paid extremely well to overcome, you know, what would be those typical challenges. But if, you know, they end up kind of in a slide towards the midseason to the back half of the season, then I think those conversations are going to start happening. But for now, I think they're pretty much put on hold. Everybody's just kind of like, you know, it's a new season, it's a new Big Ten. Like, let's see like where they're at, because, you know, the conversations that we could be having right now could be very different, you know, come 2 months from now, and like Drew's looking like, you know, a potential Heisman dark horse and stuff like that. So time will tell. College football is weird.
It is weird. That's absolutely true. And of course, everybody's playing the game on video right now anyway. So
yeah. Are you as well?
No, I am not. I there's too much gray in my chin now. I would walk into my stepson's room and try to show him old school NCAA, and he would show me new school NCAA, and I would get my butt kicked. And I don't want to have to face a walking down the stairs out of my stepson's room, hanging my head. So we're just not gonna make that happen.
Hey, fair enough.
So let's talk a little bit about the roster, a little bit of roster turnover, and some guys brought in. You got a former Buckeye roaming around on the wide receiver area too. So talk a little bit about the roster, some of the big guys who have left, and how James Franklin plans to replace them.
Yeah, so I would say the biggest loss right now would definitely be the two edge rushers in Jop Robinson and Adisa Isaac. Both those guys went in the NFL draft in the first and second round, respectively. So anytime that happens, that's hard to replace that kind of productivity. But I think they are in a good position to replace like what they brought to the table in shifting Abdul Carter down from linebacker to edge, which has been a big talking point among the Penn State faithful recently. And they also still have Denai Dennis Sutton on the other side, which he was kind of the five-star blue chip defensive end recruit that Penn State got, you know, a guy who has big aspirations for leaving his mark at Penn State. They also have some real experienced players behind them who haven't gotten too much of a run just because of the depth that they had at edge. So I think they're well set up there. But other areas of kind of some churn is, you know, the cornerbacks, like all three of their starting cornerbacks left, you know, probably most notably Kalen King, who left for the NFL as well. There, you know, just collectively in that secondary, there was a lot of experience and talent at the cornerback spot, but they were able to replace a good deal of that with, you know, just some younger guys coming up like Cam Miller. But they also brought in guys like AJ Harris, transfer cornerback from Georgia, as well as Jalen Kimber from Florida. So they're, you know, doing their part to at least try and replace that production at cornerback. And as you just alluded to, you know, at the wide receiver spot, that's probably one of the biggest question marks going into the 2024 season. They lost a handful of guys to the transfer portal, most notably Keandre Lambert-Smith, who was basically Penn State's de facto number one receiver, even though the wide receiver group as a whole wasn't like the most electric group at Penn State in 2023. But, you know, just losing that experience and that talent was hard. That hurt them a lot. But, you know, kind of in a weird, like, full circle moment, Julian Fleming decides to come to Penn State after, you know, choosing the Buckeyes over the Nittany Lions back during his high school recruitment. I mean, I remember that very well, just being like kind of a local guy to like where he went to high school and stuff. But, you know, his coming into Penn State is very interesting, both from that standpoint and also the standpoint that he kind of becomes like almost the leader of the group, even though this is first year in the program. Like, he's the only guy who has like really a proven track record of success at wide receiver in college football. Like, there's other guys who are in that group, guys like Harrison Wallace and Omari Evans and Caden Saunders and stuff like that. But some of those guys have been hamstrung by injuries. Other guys haven't been given like a lot of opportunities to kind of show what they can do. So there's a lot of question marks with that group going into, you know, 2024, and with second year wide receiver coach Marcus Hagans. Like, there's a lot of people like very anxiously wondering like what that group is going to look like. But, you know, so overall, I would say like definitely a lot of talent that they lost, and by different means, like they found ways to do their best to replace that productivity. And so we'll see how that kind of coalesces.
Yeah. for your sake and for Julian Fleming's, I hope he's able to stay healthy. The poor guy has battled injuries his entire collegiate career. It seemed like he got off the bus in Columbus hurt, coming right out of high school, and was never truly able to reach his full potential in Columbus due to multiple injuries. Dude has tons of heart. He has a lot of give a darn, but unfortunately, he just couldn't stay healthy and stay on the field the majority of his career. So hopefully that'll work out for him and for you guys as well. Moving on from the roster a little bit, and I'm glad you brought up Abdul Carter moving down from linebacker to defensive end, because we've had a major debate on our show whether he deserves to be credited in the top 10 in the Big Ten at that position because he hasn't truly played it. And I said he absolutely does, and my co-host said absolutely not, and we went back and forth and back and forth. He ended up being in the top 10 because I put him so high. Is Abdul Carter going to be legit on the defensive end? Because every time I watched him, he played on the line of scrimmage a lot for a linebacker. So it felt natural to me, like, yeah, we're going to put his hand in the dirt and let him be a defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, this is truly like a Micah Parsons type moment. You know, he went from being drafted as a linebacker to moving to edge for the Cowboys. And so now Abdul is kind of getting that same experience. Just he's getting it in college. So he's getting it a couple of seasons earlier, if you will. But mm-hmm. I think this is a natural transition for him. Like you just said, you know, he was placed in the line of scrimmage a lot. And basically, like, his main task was to go after the quarterback. Like, that's what he was most prolific at. That's what he was most effective at. And granted, I mean, he had sideline to sideline speed, so he could track down ball carriers left and right. But I think this is a really great move for him. You know, when you look at him compared to you know, some of the other edge rushers at Penn State, but also in the Big Ten, you know, just with the handful that I've looked at, his first step is quicker than most. And just given like his natural strength and speed and flexibility and all that stuff, I think this is going to be a very good transition for him. This is also, this was kind of also his comfort zone, as a recruit in high school as well. There was kind of like he was like a tweener, like defensive end / linebacker type prospect in high school. So obviously he came to Penn State initially as a linebacker, but he 100% could have been recruited as an edge as well. And so now things have just kind of progressed in a way where Penn State sees the potential in that kind of move. And, you know, I think they're going to reap the benefits of it for sure.
Yeah, I would think so. At least that was my prediction anyways for you guys. All right, so let me ask you this question, and I'm going to ask you to be brutally honest about your team, your roster, and your expectations here.
Yeah.
What is the strength of Penn State this season? What is the weakness?
Yeah, so strength, you know, I'm probably going to sound like a broken record here. It's the defense, and especially the defensive line. Like, that is it's the deepest, most experienced, and most talented group on the team. And that's even after losing two NFL edge rushers. You know, that it's closely followed, I would say, probably by the safety group on the defensive side. But the defensive line is going to be where Penn State is going to win and lose a lot of these games this season. The weakness is the wide receivers, you know, because they lost, you know, some of the, like, the, I don't want to sound too harsh, but there wasn't a ton of production from the wide receiver spot this past season, and the production that was there, they lost it. So they need to make sure that they have that whole situation figured out very early on this season, because the new look Big Ten is not just going to let them coast without knowing, like, who's their number two, who's their number three receiver, like they basically tried to do last season. Like, they thought Dante Cephas was going to be the clear-cut number two receiver for them, and, you know, if you were paying close enough attention to that, you know how that ended up. So they got to know, like, who their guys are going to be. They got to know, like, what rotation they like to go with. And they, you know, we just didn't see that happen last season. So that's where I would say the most glaring things are.
Gotcha. All right, let's take a look at this schedule that you guys have here and break this down slightly to come up with a ceiling and floor in your opinion. So very interesting game to start the year off on the road. Going down country roads, heading to West Virginia to take on rival the Mountaineers. I think this game is going to be incredibly interesting because I think it's going to let people know right away where Penn State stands. I think you guys played them first last year as well at home, and Drew Aller had this great game, and kind of set the stage of here he is, and then got the rug pulled out from under you when he never threw a pass over 15 yards after that, it seemed like. It was just kind of odd how that worked. But I think that this is a different situation than last year. I think you're going to know what you have right away. And if you're in a dogfight, I don't know that that's going to be a spell well for the rest of the season. However, if you go out there and you blitzkrieg these guys, then it's like, okay, same old Penn State. They're except maybe even a little bit better offensively, which could be kind of scary for the rest of the Big Ten. So I think that game is very interesting. Then you get Bowling Green, a bye, and Kent State. So you're taking on the MAC schools from Ohio. Those should be dubs. Illinois at home to start off Big Ten play. Illinois is solid. I don't think they're world beaters, but they are solid. UCLA, probably one of the lower tier Big Ten teams this season. Deshaun Foster's first year as head coach out in Los Angeles, in case no one knew where UCLA was located. They are in Los Angeles. However, they're going to have to come across country and try to find their way to Pennsylvania for that game. Those games, I think, should be wins. And then the big one on the road at USC. This is going to be all eyeballs are going to be on this game, especially if both teams come into that game either undefeated or with only one loss. This will be a huge who's going to kind of catapult themselves to be possibly eligible for college football playoff contention and who's going to take a step back. This is a big game. This is kind of that Michigan-Penn State game from a year ago is how I kind of look at this game when you look at the roster or at least the progression of the schedule. A bye week, and then three, I think the heart of the schedule right here, in my opinion, when you look at it. You're at Wisconsin, home against Ohio State, then you're home against Washington. At Purdue, depending on what time that game is, could be tricky. Purdue, West Lafayette at night is a different animal than during the day. And then back-to-back at Minnesota, that could be tricky too. Whenever you go back-to-back on the road in the Big Ten, that second one typically could be a little bit more difficult than anticipated. And P.J. Fleck likes to play a game in a phone booth. Penn State knows this. They've been out there before and had some weird things happen. And then finish off against what I think might be one of the worst teams in the Big Ten this year, in my opinion, as they return to the meme in Maryland. So looking at this schedule, Andrew, it looks very similar to what you guys have had in the past. Just substitute USC for Michigan, and it's very similar. So, what's the ceiling? And feel free to wear your navy and white here, at it, like. What's the floor if things go bad?
Yeah. So I would say the ceiling right now is 11-1. With that lone loss being to Ohio State. I think that even if, you know, Penn State is able to be the best version of themselves this year, I think that that talent gap between them and Ohio State this year is just going to be too much of a challenge for them to overcome. The floor, I would say, is 8-4. And the four losses being to Ohio State and then losing those two road contests to USC and Wisconsin. Because you're talking about a cross-country road trip. Penn State historically has not played tremendously well on the road. It's probably going to be a ranked matchup, which hasn't been James Franklin's specialty over the past 10 years, if we're being completely honest. So I could see that going either way. And kind of the same thing with Wisconsin as well. Even though they didn't light the world on fire in 2023, I think Luke Fickell is a very good coach. I think Wisconsin has plenty of pedigree and plenty of juice behind them as a program to rebound in 2024. So I could see that as well. And then that fourth loss, I could actually see it being Washington if things slide, you know, with possibly like stacking losses, and if there's a kind of an emotional kind of hard loss to Ohio State, that type of loss has kind of bit Penn State in the past, like where they've allowed them to kind of carry over to following weeks. So even though they're kind of like in a bit of rebuilding mode after being the college football playoff runner-ups, I like Jed Fish as a coach. I think they've been able to kind of piece together a good roster, or at least good enough to go into the season with a little bit of confidence. And by that point, they'll have two-thirds of a season to kind of figure things out on both sides of the ball. So I think anything can happen, especially if you're kind of facing kind of an emotionally downtrodden Penn State team. Anything can happen there. So I still like them in the rest of the games, but I think those four specifically have the highest amount of intrigue. So that's where I think this floor is.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think that's fair, in all honesty. I mean, more fair than what I'm getting from a lot of people. We're like, we're 12-0, baby. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. But, no. I get it. You know, you want to go into the season with tremendous optimism and everything else. All right. Question I didn't have in the notes for you, and this is just shooting off the cuff. Let's say it does go really bad and the fan base starts, you know, chiming in that they're done with James Franklin. Is there anybody else right now that you think might be on the athletic director's radar? If that
That's a tough question. Yeah. You know, not really right now. The thing that they've always kind of had on like a short list as a program is offensive and defensive coordinators. Like that's, you know, not really like a closely held secret, but excuse me. As far as like head coach openings out there, or, you know, people that they might want to reach out to. Everybody on the Penn State side has always clamored about the idea of bringing Matt Rhule to Penn State since he was a Nittany Lion. Obviously, he's done like great things in college football, both at like Temple and Baylor, and that's why he's in the position that he is now at Nebraska. I think it'd be very hard right now to take him away from Nebraska. Just given the fact that like this is his first year, Nebraska's paying him very well. He's bringing in like highly recruited blue chip talent and so it kind of has like the same Scott Frost feeling, you know, before things went south with Scott Frost. Like there's a lot of energy right now, so I don't think Nebraska would want to lose him. Outside of that, I don't really know who else they might want to look at. You know, that's kind of always been the big question, like after everybody's like, oh, you know, like they got to get rid of Franklin, they got to move on from Franklin. It's like, well, who else really do you want them to look at to kind of bring in? Because like if all you're doing is benchmarking him against like Kirby Smart, Nick Saban and Ryan Day and Jim Harbaugh and stuff like that, like pretty much every coach is going to come up short. So I don't know, that's a very hard question to answer off the cuff, but I think Matt Rhule is probably option number one.
I didn't think about Rhule, but that makes perfect sense, in all honesty. And our Nebraska friends are not going to like that answer at all. That might have to be a good college huddle, a video between you and them, if that were to happen. What about Luke Fickell?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some interest there. I mean, Wisconsin kind of fits in that same mold, I would say, as Nebraska, in the sense that, like, Wisconsin knows like what they have there, and just as a program, like they have enough history behind them that they could drum up enough like booster support to keep them on board. Penn State's gonna like they have enough resources at their disposal to make a run at just about anybody outside of, you know, kind of the elite of the elite, both in the Big Ten and the SEC. But I think for the most part, like, programs are well equipped to compete in a bidding war, and kind of plucking coaches out of places like where they're having success, I feel like is pretty tough. So, you know, that's a question that I'd like to chew on a little bit to, you know, maybe come up with a top five, you know, like kind of candidate sort of deal. But yeah, it's an interesting one for sure. You know, I feel
you listen to Buckeye fans, Ryan Day might be available at the end of the year. So you never know. Let me ask you one more question, and this is just on a personal note. Is the Paterno family still hanging around State College at all? Or are they kind of like been excommunicated?
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings.
Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, yeah, I mean, so Sue Paterno still lives in State College. Jay Paterno is still on the board of trustees at Penn State, but on an operative level, they pretty much just kind of they don't involve themselves too much anymore. There's certain public events that will happen, around the community that, most of them are just philanthropic, charity related stuff that they'll be involved in. But anything related to the football team, I haven't heard the name Paterno mentioned in over a decade.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's always interesting because I have a good friend who's a Penn State fan, and we used to have him come on and we would get into the whole Paterno thing. And of course I was super interested in finding out where they hid the statue and everything. There's this whole tinfoil hat wearing, where's this thing at? And someone located it. And and so I've always been super interested in that, but that's good knowledge to know is that they're still there. They're still a part of the family's still a part of the university, but they've distanced themselves from the football program. And that makes sense to me.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And, the only time really that football and Paterno is kind of linked anymore is the couple of instances where the Board of Trustees has had to vote on stuff that impacts the football program. So there might be a quick quote or soundbite from Jay Paterno on stuff like that. But yeah, outside of that, there's no involvement. It's nowhere even close to James Franklin calling up anybody with the last name Paterno and saying, hey, what should I be doing here? That is so far from being reality.
Yeah. Very good. All right, Andrew, tell everybody where they can find the Nittany Blues podcast, especially if someone's a Penn State fan watching this and they've never heard of your podcast before. We want to make sure that we point them towards you.
Yeah, so we're on, all the major podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, even though I think that's been shut down, but we're also on Amazon as well. So basically anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Another great way to find us is on our website at nittanyblues.com. You can listen to all of our previous episodes there. You can learn more about the show, about myself and my co-host Vince, and all that stuff. We also have our own merch at shop.nittanyblues.com. So if you listen to us, you like us, and you want to support the show, that's a great way to do so. And outside of that, we're on Facebook, X, Twitter, and Instagram at Nittany Blues and Nittany Blues Podcast.
There you go. And if you forget all that, of course, just go over to thecollegehuddle.com, go over to Big Ten, Penn State, you'll find the Nittany Blues, and you'll find all their links on their College Huddle page as well. And of course, we were tickled pink when the Nittany Blues decided to be our Penn State affiliate at the College Huddle. They are, I think, in my opinion, the best Penn State podcast out there that I listen to. And so we're absolutely glad to have them. Andrew, we will be back to do more previewing later this season. That game could be a big one. So obviously make sure that you like, share, follow, subscribe, all that good stuff. Ring the bell so that when we do our Ohio State Penn State preview, you'll see Andrew and myself battling it out on the Twitter sphere and everything else as we prepare for that game. Thank you, Andrew.
Appreciate it, Eric.
And welcome back, guys. Thank you, Andrew, from the Nittany Blues podcast for that great interview. If you're a Penn State fan, by all means, head on over there. Check out their website. Give them a follow. Fantastic guys who do fantastic work for all you Penn State fans there over at the Nittany Blues podcast. All right, Chris, let's talk roster. I'm going to share the Our Lads page here. We're going to take a look at Penn State offensively first. Of course, the first name right at the top there at the X position, ex-Buckeye Julian Fleming. He's going to headline what is basically a unproven, inexperienced wide receiver room, which has the Penn State fans a little worried. In the years past, Penn State's offensive line has been a little bit of a struggle. I think they're going to be decent this year. Of course, you got Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton running the football. And Drew Aller really is, highlight it, circle it, whatever you want to do with him. A lot of this season is going to ride on his shoulder. If he can take that next step, I really do think Penn State might be in a little bit of a trouble, Chris.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, you said it. The offensive line should be solid. They should have a good running game. One thing I don't remember if I heard you mention or not, the tight end position, Tyler Warren. Is a pretty good tight end.
Might be the best receiver next to Julian Fleming on the team. And like I told you, Andrew, Julian Fleming, you know, we like the guy, but dude,
just if he stays struggled healthy,
with injuries so much.
If he stays healthy, he's a tremendous talent. But that's going to be, I think, the challenge for them, because if he doesn't stay healthy, Eric, Warren's going to be the only target he's got to throw to. Because like you said, the rest of these guys are very much unproven. There's some talent there, but
sure.
At the same time, I don't have a lot of confidence.
Yep.
So you said it. I think it rides a lot on Drew Aller's arm, but also on his legs and, more importantly, his decision-making. We have to see that Drew Aller can actually get the ball downfield.
Right.
You know, he has a very good completion percentage, Eric. His numbers look phenomenal when you just take a look at them on paper, his touchdown interception ratio, his completion percentage. But then you really dive into it and you see that everything is 15 yards or less with Aller for the most part.
Three things on film really revealed themselves about Drew Aller last year. Number one, really good protection. Number two, pretty decent wide receiver talent.
Yes.
Number three, they never asked him to do anything spectacular.
He's going to have to do some.
He's going to have to this year. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be a tough road for Penn State. But I'll tell you what, it's a road that if they can find a way to go 10-2 again this season, they're going to find themselves in the college football playoff.
That's really the storyline here, in all honesty. Let's look at the defense now, guys. And this is the strength of this team. There's no doubt about it. And as Andrew pointed out, the defensive line is definitely going to be trouble for a lot of people. And really, again, Abdul Carter, I am huge on him. But don't sleep, as we were informed, do not sleep on Dennis Sutton. Might be the most talented guy on this football team when it's all said and done. I'm a big Kobe King fan as well. And then, of course, JR is a big Dominique DeLuca fan. In the backfield, defensive backfield, how could you not like Kevin Winston Jr. At safety? This is again, a really solid defense, Chris. And one that, again, I think James Franklin's going to hang his hat on, more than likely. Penn State's going to have to get comfortable winning close games.
Yeah, it's a solid defense, Eric. But outside of Abdul Carter, I don't know that there's a lot of wow factor this defense. I think their linebackers are very good. I think that Kevin Winston Jr. is very good. But, I mean, seriously, if not for Abdul Carter, this team has not got wow factor at all. I think the secondary outside of Kevin Winston could be a bit of an issue. Even though they're tenured, they're not necessarily experienced. So I think that could present some problems, especially when you're facing the potential attacks that an Oregon or an Ohio State may have down the road. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a good defense. How good? It's just wait and see.
All right, let's take a look at this schedule, Chris. Now, the over-under, according to Vegas, is 10 wins. And let's see if we can find 10 wins on here. At West Virginia, in my opinion, Chris, this is
tough.
That might be, in all honesty, that's really going to tell us where we're at. If Penn State goes in there and dominates, you might have a playoff team on your hands. If they struggle, and I think they might, then I think you could have a situation where I have my prediction at. Versus Bowling Green, a bye, versus Kent State, versus Illinois, versus UCLA. I don't think there's any issues there outside of West Virginia. At USC, mark it down, one of those two teams are going to get eliminated from the college football playoff that day. That's kind of my prediction. Another bye at Wisconsin. Boy, that's a dangerous
tough.
That's game.
A tough place to play, that especially with the Buckeyes the next week.
Yes.
If you're looking past Wisconsin, Fickle will get you.
Yep. Yep, exactly. You better believe that is dangerous. And then no matter what happens against Ohio State, whether you shock the Buckeyes or you get beat, either way, the emotions of coming off that game and after playing Wisconsin to have Washington come to the house, now that's going to be the wideout game, okay? But still, I think that could be a big letdown. And again, this is another team who has to go into West Lafayette. Weird things happen in West Lafayette. And if you –
let's ask Urban Meyer.
You hypothetically, let's just say you lose two of those four against USC, Wisconsin, Ohio State, and Washington. And you're sitting there at that time, you'd be what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You'd be 7-2. And then going to West Lafayette. And if you don't have your A game and Ryan Walters shocks you, your season's done.
The next week's no easy one.
Yeah. Back to back. Former Big Ten West opponents on the road, and then they get the proverbial dub to finish the season against Maryland.
Yeah,
Chris, you and JR both have them at 9-3. Sorry, I missed JR's prediction there. I make these things way too fast before we record. That should be 6-3 in the Big Ten for JR, along with you, Chris. I have them at 8-4, 5-4 in the Big Ten.
Yeah. And I can see a scenario play out for either one of those. I think the big thing we've got different there, Eric, is you have them losing to West Virginia?
I don't believe so. I have
them losing. No. You had them losing four in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I have them losing to USC, Ohio State, Wisconsin. And I think I have Minnesota beating them.
Yeah, I think that's probably the one where we differed was Minnesota.
And probably. But here's the thing. Here's where I'm at with Penn State. And I'm sure some Penn State people are going to agree with me. And by all means, please let me know why you disagree with me in the chat below. I think Penn State as a program is in a scary place of apathy. They've had so many 10-2, 9-3 seasons. And if they lose a game or two early, this thing could get away from them.
You know what they're becoming, don't you, Eric? They're becoming Iowa.
Oh, that hurts the soul if you're a Penn State fan.
A very good team that really, like you said, is just becoming apathetic, becoming accepting of playing that little brother role in the conference, of playing that 9-3, 10-2 game every year.
I think the difference between Penn State and Iowa, though, outside of the fact that Penn State has, I think, more of an advantage as being a blue blood and Iowa's not, is that if Iowa can go 10-2 and sneak into the playoffs, I think the fan base is happy with that once every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Where I think it's going to be expected to at least go 10-2 and get to the playoffs every year. That's kind of the bar for them. And I don't know that that's going to happen as often as they think it is now, given the fact that the Big Ten, I think, is stronger than it has been in the past. I know they don't have to play Michigan. They basically took Michigan off the schedule and put USC in. But I have very little faith that James Franklin is going to win those games that could be quote-unquote coin flip games.
Yeah, I agree. And like you said, there's a potential for a lot of them now. Yeah, they got to avoid Michigan and Oregon this year. But what's to say that next year they don't get that schedule that, you know, Michigan had this year where they got to face Ohio State and Oregon and, you know, potentially Michigan or USC in that same year. You know, you could easily end up with three very, very, very good teams on your schedule. And then you've got the up-and-coming teams in the conference. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to get any easier. I can see a scenario where Penn State, even being a blue blood, could be relegated to fifth or sixth best in this conference.
It was not that long ago, a couple years ago, they lost to Indiana.
Yeah.
Indiana, under Cignetti, is probably going to get better. Okay? There's a lot of teams in this conference who are getting better. And if you're not also getting better, then that means you're staying stagnant and you're getting worse. You're going to get passed up. So this is a huge year for James Franklin and Penn State. And like I said, when I took my trip to Pennsylvania, I just didn't feel any buzz from many fans. And I don't know.
What did you see more of, Ohio State shirts or Penn State shirts?
Oh, it was Ohio State by far. But as Andrew said, you know, Erie's not exactly Penn State country to them.
It's not, but it's no closer to Ohio State.
Right, but you also, I think if we went to Pittsburgh, it might look a little different. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see because we're going to go to Pittsburgh. But either way, this is a huge year for Penn State. I'm super interested to see how things go for them. And, of course, whenever we go to Penn State, it's typically a pretty good ball game. So we'll be looking forward to that as well, although it's going to be a big noon game.
No whiteout this year.
No, which stinks. I mean, in all honesty, that stinks. That should be a whiteout game, mark it down. That should be a night game every year when they play one another.
It doesn't matter where it's at.
Yeah. Like, share, subscribe. We really do appreciate your support and help as we continue to work our way through the Big Ten. We've got, I think, six teams left to work to go, maybe five or six. So we're getting closer as the season is getting very close. We're also getting closer to the finish line with these previews. If you're interested, go check out the other previews that we have done this year. All the four Big Ten West teams have been accomplished. A lot of the old Big Ten West teams have been looked at as well. And we're kind of working our way east a little bit here. And like I said, we got a couple big boys left to do, including Ohio State and Michigan. We will get to those as we get closer to the kickoff of the season. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the channel. Ring the bell so you get notified anytime we go live. And when we go live, you just never know who's going to be on the show. Maybe it's a former Buckeye like we had this past Sunday when Ryan Miller joined the show and talked for an hour about great memories, including some he had playing the Nittany Lions in Penn State, Chris. Till next time, OH.
IO.
Go Bucks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.